ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादं शङ्करं लोकशङ्करं शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीं यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तन्न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः Let us read from the verse 18. Samashatrau cha mitre cha तथा मानापमानयोः शीतोष्णसुखदुःखेषु समत्सङ्गविवर्जितः तुल्यनिन्दास्तुतिर्मौनी सन्तुष्टो येन केनचित् अनिकेतस्थिरमतिः भक्तिमान् मे प्रियो नरः भक्तिमान् मे प्रियो नरः दिस् नरः दिस् पर्सन् दिस् ह्यूमन् बीङ्ग् भक्तिमान् वन् हू इस् पोसेस्ड् आफ् डिवोशन् द डिवोटी Bhakti means devotion. Bhaktiman, one who possesses devotion, meaning bhaktaha, devotee, me priyaha, he is very dear to me. This we've been seeing since some time. These last 8 verses of the 12th chapter, Lord Krishna is describing his bhakta, his devotee. What kind of devotee? Jnani Bhaktaha. The devotee who is characterized by knowledge. So, ultimately, Jnani and Bhakta are not different things. In the 7th chapter, Lord Krishna, talking about his devotee, the 4 stages, said, Chaturvidaha, there are 4 kinds of devotees. Artho, Jignyasu, Rarthasi, Jnani, Cha, Bharatarshava. Artha, Arthasi, Jignyasu, Jnani. We change the order, by the way. Well, the Lord Krishna says, Artha, Jignyasu, Arthasi. Not everybody does change his order, but we do that. Artha, Artharthi, Jnani, and Jignyasu, and Jnani. So, first level of devotee is Artha. One who is in a dire difficulty, in a great difficulty, and he does not know how to get out of that. So, he resorts to Ishvara to save him or her. Artha, like Draupadi, who was in the court of the Kauravas, in the midst of the Kaurava, Dushyasana was really harassing her, stripping her, and she could not get help from anybody, for whatever reason. So Pandavas, Kaurava, nobody offered to help her. It's a matter of debate, but then she could not get help from anybody. That's the idea here. And then she appealed to Lord Krishna. Oh Lord, don't you realize that I'm in the midst of this Kauravas? And I'm in great difficulty, don't you see that? And then comes Lord Krishna. In the form of the cloth. That's called Vastravatara. So that's also an avatara incarnation of Lord. So Vastra, but in the form of the garment he comes. And that's how Draupadi is protected. So these are very beautiful stories of how God always protects his devotees. When the devotee totally surrenders, it took perhaps quite some time for Draupadi to totally surrender to Lord. As long as she was seeking some other shelter or refuge, as long as she was looking upon somebody else as a potential protector, so long apparently Lord was waiting. And then Draupadi discovered, and she came to an ultimate conclusion, there is nobody in the world who can protect me. At the same time, she has total faith that Lord Krishna can protect her also. And with that faith, she appeals to Lord Krishna. Thus, that is how a devotee appeals to Ishvara. Artha, Gajendra is another famous example. This elephant, king of the elephant, he also was caught in the water by the crocodile. In the midst of the water, the struggle went on for a long time, and the elephant saw that he was losing the battle. He was drowning in water. A point came when it became very difficult for him to breathe, and he was quite sure he would not survive. So until then, he exerted himself. He tried to release himself from the hold of this crocodile. He realized that now I'm helpless. So Swamiji often talks about helplessness. When a person feels helpless, it's an enlightened helplessness, understand? Helplessness coming from an understanding that indeed I'm helpless. Of course, depending upon what kind of need you have. In case of Draupadi or Gajendra story that we are told, these needs are the worldly needs. All needs coming to their own life, their own, purity, etc. Still they are worldly needs. The examples are of worldly needs. But as far as the spiritual seeker is concerned, his need is that I want to gain knowledge. I want to be free. I want Ishvara. The last verse will be told, Mat Paramaha, those people who are devoted to me. And then you find yourself helpless. helpless in front of what? We find ourselves helpless with reference to our own inner impulses. I cannot overcome. I cannot overcome my own anger or my own sadness. Or I cannot overcome my temptations. I cannot discover adequate amount of devotion and shraddha to apply my mind. I find my mind still gets distracted and my efforts are not working. Thus, I find myself helpless. Swami, I don't make progress. No progress is happening. And I find that now I cannot help myself. Now I don't see anybody else who can help me. Of course, people go to different people, you know, and then whether some charts and place your hand on your head and peacock feather or something like that, you know. People may try all those kind of things. But then no help available. Then you find nobody can help me. And Ishwara can help me. So that is how at some point in time every spiritual seeker or most spiritual seekers discover the need for help. And when you need help, it is intelligent to seek help from the one who can help, of course. And Ishvara, the omniscient. Not only omniscient almighty, most important aspect of Ishvara is his benevolent. That is Krupal. Meaning, he always showers his grace. Anugraha, or to shower grace, is the very nature of Ishvara. That's the most important aspect. Because someone can be all-knowing and knows what I need. Can be all-powerful, is capable of fulfilling my need also, but may not care for me. But here is one who is, one who always showers his grace. It is for asking, of course. How come he is watching? Lord Krishna knew that Draupadi needs help. And how come he did not come forward before Draupadi asked for it? You asked for it. So Krupa also is an apeksha. Even grace of the God comes as a response to something. If the grace is favor, then favor of Ishvara. This is called favor. Ishvara can shower his favor. And so, we are specially favored, like our Swami's experience of standing in the security line at the airport. When the calculations were wrong, long line, no way he can get the flight, which was leaving after 20 minutes, this line would take at least 1 hour. What do you do? And fortunately, some agent comes along, Ahmedabad, 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 are the passengers for going to Ahmedabad? I am there. So he's taken out of the line to a special place. Quickly, the security is done. He's escorted to the plane. These things do happen. This is called favor. Because if you stand in line, there will be no end, really, you know. I don't think that many devotees are so, if my karmas, whatever, you know what they are, if I have to stand in line, exhaust all my karmas, there is no way that I will ever reach you. And so you have to do the favor. So this is a trust that Ishvara favors. Favoring is what? Is out of line. Ishvara, we expect him not just be a judge, you know, who just passes on judgment. Or not an officer who works according to rules. If Ishvara also works only according to rules, then we don't need him. Because all like, ultimately if my karma alone is going to give me what I want, I'll do my karma, I don't need you. But no, he's capable of and he does favor. Grace means favoring. It's not legal actually. If an officer favors somebody, you know, then that means he's breaking the law. Not in case of Ishvara. Devotees do not look upon Ishvara as just an officer who works according to rules. Then of course he may be there, we don't care for him. But the governor of the state actually makes all the rules. But when governors, what do you call it? You know, his car is going with the pilots and whatever. That time they don't bother red light and stuff like that. He just goes. He makes the rules. Rules don't apply to him. Understand that? And what's the use of being a governor? You will start with the red light? No. Everybody clears out. You have a sign at the entrance of a door. No entrance without permission. But you don't need to follow that, you know. Or your children, your family members need not. Rules apply all right, but there is always some exception to the rules, understand? And we want to take advantage of that exception. We want to become exception to the rule. That's our prayer. Lord, please make him an exception. If I have to follow all the rules, there is no way I can ever make it. And so, Andava, become an exception to the rule. You don't have to go through this long line. Special treatment. So this is how devotees pray to the Lord to favor them. Artha, artharthi. Artharthi means one who wants some worldly, he wants some, to achieve some worldly end. Jignyasu, one who wants to know. And that culminates through jnani, the wise person who knows Ishvara. Who knows Ishvara as the very self. Therefore he becomes Ishvara. So idea is that this process of becoming Ishvara, not becoming in the normal sense that we understand. But then, I think that Ishvara is different from me and therefore I want to reach him. A discovery that what I am seeking is my own self, that is called becoming. But still, ultimately it is becoming one with Ishvara, or discovering the oneness with Ishvara. So, bhakti or devotion leads to knowledge. This is Vedantin's interpretation of Gita's teaching. Is what? That bhakti, the devotion, is a means to knowledge. The bhakta's interpretation would be, the knowledge leads to bhakti. We will not, you know, debate on that, because anirvachaniya, meaning that it is very difficult to say it one way or the other. All we can say is, you need both. There cannot be pursuit of knowledge without devotion, and there cannot be devotion without knowledge. So what is the means of what? Don't bother about it. Although as an explanation we can say, when it comes to Saguna Brahma, meaning worshipping Ishvara with attributes, knowledge is the means of bhakti. When it comes to Nirguna Brahma, knowing Brahman as a self, bhakti becomes the means of knowledge. But we require both of them. And therefore, the culmination of devotion is in knowledge. And culmination of knowledge is in devotion. You will not find any wise person who is just jnani and not a bhakta. You will never find a bhakta who is just a devotee and not a jnani. All poets, saints, if you see their, you know, compositions, their understanding of clarity about Ishvara is very much there. Where did they go for getting this teaching? God alone knows where they went. But we can see that they know the essence of the scriptures. At the same time, see the great wise people, even Ramana Maharshi and others also, very delicate, but very soft heart. So there are compositions by Ramana Maharshi also about Arunachalam and, you know, they're full of devotion. And so after all, devotion is the nature of the self. Love is the nature of self. Ignorance becomes the inhibiting factor in manifestation of love. With knowledge, that inhibition goes away. And you become free. What is meant by freedom is free to love, that's all. There is no reservation. Love, of course, we always do, but a lot of conditions are there, a lot of reservations are there right now. What are the conditions? My ragadveshas place the conditions. That I have, it's easy for me to love somebody whom I like. Difficult to love somebody whom I dislike. So thus my likes and dislikes become the inhibiting factors for manifestation of my love. When they go away, I don't have to actually do anything about love because that is my nature. We don't, all we need to do is to just remove the obstacles which come in the way of manifestation of my love or devotion. Devotee I am. So you can say the knowledge removes obstacles to bhakti, or bhakti removes knowledge, obstacles to knowledge, or whatever you want to call it. But ultimately, that is why jnani bhakta, meaning that an enlightened devotee of the Lord. So here in the chapter of Bhakti Yoga, the conclusion by the at the end of chapter 8 verses is of a wise person. So these attributes, or rather the characteristics described Advaishta Sarabhutanam in the last 8 verses, they are the characteristics of a devotee or a wise person. And now Lord Krishna is concluding the discussion in the 18th verse, where it was Samashatrauca Mitreja Tatha Manapamanayoho. Shatrauca Mitreja Samaha, one who is even minded to Shatru and Mitra, to a friend or a foe. Tatha Manapamanayoho, and also he is even minded with reference to insult as well as praise, I mean, or honor or dishonor. So I just thought of this example. So yesterday I quoted that. This is a very beautiful example. The example of an actor playing the role of a beggar. He is equal to manapamanayoho, satravuti mitre in the play. This beggar encounters a foe, an enemy. Let's say in the play, there is an enemy of this beggar who comes and insults him, hits him. And in the play, the beggar may react in whichever way he is asked to react. But in his mind, he does not react. He knows that this insult only goes how deep? Only to his costume. It does not penetrate beyond the costume. Meaning that the actor does not feel insulted even when he is insulted in the play. Is it not so? Nor does he feel honored when he is honored in the play. He may be a king who is honored. If he is an intelligent person, he knows that all his honor is given to his costume and not to himself, and therefore he is even-minded. It's okay. When he acts as a beggar, then all kinds of insults come to him. You know that. This is also, it belongs to the costume. Therefore, samashatrauca mitrecha, like an actor is in the play, he is even-minded to shatru, an enemy, and mitra, a friend. Because enemy and friend are there at a certain level. At the level of play, the enemies and friends are there, but then at the level of the actor, meaning at the absolute level, there is no enemy, there is no friend. The reality is that which transcends both enemy and friend. So reality of the actor is the one that transcends both enemy and friend. So when enemy comes in the play, he is an enemy. When a friend comes, he is a friend. Therefore, different aspects are invoked from him. In the play, in a given part, some enemy comes, then the enemy is invoked in him. Some friend comes, then a friend is invoked in him. So he himself also is an enemy and friend. Not only other person is enemy and friend, but who is he? He is the one who knows that I transcend both enmity and friendliness. Knowing the reality about the enemy and friend, knowing that both of them are only the level of play, only level of costume, they are mithya, just an appearance, just a play. In reality, who am I? Who am I and who I look upon as friend? Both of us transcend both mitra and shatru. So when that is known, when is it possible to be even-minded to enemy and friend? When you know the reality that transcends both of them. Otherwise it's a value. Here this is the vision. So what Lord Krishna describes in these 8 verses is what is spontaneous for the wise person. Basically because his own perception about himself has changed. That's all that is necessary. We do not have to separately change perception of everything else. All that is necessary is for us to change our own perception. Because perception that I have for everybody else ultimately arises from perception I have about myself. Is it not so? As long as I look upon myself as an individual being, as a limited being, as an inadequate being, as a needy being, so I am needy, in need of something. Then when I look around, oh, this is favorable, he can fulfill my needs, he can help fulfilling my needs. This fellow is not, you know, he can hurt. This is, when we have a certain agenda, we always look at the world only from that agenda. If I am seeking donation, then what is my perception? Potential devotee, donor, not donor, potential, that's all. A doctor, you know, an attorney or a lawyer, for him is all clients, you know, the potential client or what it is. So when you enter a shop, as far as the shopkeeper is concerned, potential, you know, customer or not. Oh, this fellow, he just comes everywhere. So, he is concerned about customer or not customer. What I am saying is, he has perception that I am the shopkeeper. Therefore, he only looks upon them as customers or what? When he goes on home, then he is a father. Then looks upon them as children and this and that. See, the perception that I have about myself is what determines perception I have about others. It's not that everybody looks upon those children as son or daughter. Only he does. Because his perception is, I am father. Where his perception is, I am son. Then this is mother or father. So how my perception about others is determined by my perception of myself. That's all that needs to change. Vedanta teaches that all that needs to happen is my perception about myself should change. That this is my costume. We will be told in the 13th chapter anyway. This will be very clearly told in the next chapter, in the very first verse. Knowing the costume as costume, knowing the actor as actor. When I realize that I try and set the costume, all the vyavahara, all the interaction or transactions take place only at the level of costume. Only when I am identified as the costume that I react to the vyavahara. If the actor by any chance forgets he is an actor and he takes himself a beggar, then his response will be different. Suppose he forgets his actor and he thinks I am a beggar, then that fellow is an enemy. This fellow is a friend. He has given me a dollar. He did not give me anything. Whatever, you see? How the perception, his perception of himself changes, his perception of everybody else also will change. That's all we need to do, just to change our perception about ourselves. And that is what happened for the wise person. His perception is that, I am Brahman. I am the self of all. I am one non-dual. All duality is there at the level of perception, at the level of creation, level of name and form, level of costume. It's called mithya. Level of play, everything is fine. So for the wise person, everything becomes a play. Inasmuch as there is no identification of the costume, therefore he follows the rules of the play, of course. He need not, of course, they say that, he need not follow any rules. Because he has transcended even the vidhi and nisheda, meaning that even scriptures also cannot determine how he should conduct himself, but he does. Thus, an actor will follow the script. So wise person also will follow the script. We expect that. And therefore he would act properly as we would do. But what is his perception is different. Meaning that in the perception of wise person, there is no shatru and mitra. That's all. If there is shatru, then if you look upon somebody as your enemy, you are going to react. Reaction is automatic, it is impulsive. Habitual, I should say. Reaction is habitual. My perception automatically brings about a reaction. Moment I perceive somebody as friend, I would definitely react with affection. No separate effort is required to bring out affection. My perception automatically brings about a self within myself. that this is father. His son is automatically brought up with, I don't make a separate effort. See how our perception determines everything. Whatever we do is all determined by our perception of ourselves. This Atma-bodha, that is self-knowledge, is so important because the way I perceive myself is the way I perceive, that determines everything. Yoya Shraddha Sevasaha. Whatever Shraddha one has, that's what the person is. What Shraddha? Whatever perception one has, that changes. So wise person perception about himself has changed. Therefore, his perception of whole. Imagine that the actor who thought he was a beggar and some treatment is given to him. Give him a couple of slaps and he wakes up. He's like, hey, I'm actor, I'm not a beggar. The lower perception also changes. So although we are told samashatravacha mitrecha, the devotee, the wise person, is even-minded, equal to the friend and enemy, but in his perception there is no friend, there is no enemy. In his perception, all there is self, is myself. Brahman is not different from me. His perception is, this is I. So, one who is acting as an enemy or acting as a friend is all I. So then what is the reaction? No reaction. There cannot be a reaction towards I. What's the thing towards I, you know? What is my relationship with myself? Aham asmi, sadabhami, kadachin naham apriyaha. I shine, I never dislike myself. Meaning, I always love myself. If I look upon you as a self, then what will be my response? Nothing but love. That is the primary emotion anyway. Only because of ignorance and because of the distorted perception, that emotion also got distorted, and that very love alone was distorted as likes and dislikes. So no distortion. All there is a Shatru and Mitra. Doesn't matter what it is. Don't think that Lord Krishna, when he appears to kill some demon, that he is killing out of vengeance, out of anger, out of enmity. No. We don't expect that from God. Out of love only. How can you do that? Love is, you know, we equate love, love need not be equated to an action, understand? Love need not be equated to an action. Even an action of punishing can be out of love. If you think that punishing will be for the well-being of this person, is it not so? Is it not that a mother who loves a child will never punish a child? Not out of anger, which most people do, of course. Of course we get upset and we get angry. And so I'm not saying that every parent does what they do out of, but suppose mother remains, that then she ceases to be a mother at that time. She becomes a person. Mother will never hurt. But a person can hurt. So child manages to provoke this mother into an ordinary person. And she gets hurt by the behavior of the child. She gets fed up with the child. A mother will not. Person can. Who has an agenda? Ideally, I'm just talking. Mother's only agenda is a child. Mother is the best example because, I mean, you know, it is. If you find a selfless love, that is where you can, that's the place where you can possibly find anyway. Elsewhere it is difficult. Even between husband and wife, it's not that easy. Because they come from different backgrounds. It takes years and years and years here to develop that bond, if it does get developed. But this is natural because this child is myself. Although they say in Vedas that the father looks upon the child as a self, you know. But then, so Atma Vayinama Putra, this putra or son is myself. So apparently son is very dear to father. This is a Vedic perception. But then to mother definitely, because the fellow, the child is a part of mother only. Atmay Putra Namasi. The Vakya is Atmavai Putra Namasi. What is called Putra is my own self. That is the father statement. So therefore, it is taken for granted that a son is very dear to the father. That's the reason why what the father will give to son is always the very best. So when the father is a teacher, then the very best teaching is always imparted. So many of our great teachers also were father. Like Varuna, like Bhrugu goes to his father, Varuna. Bhrugu vai Varunhi, Varunam Pitaram Upasasara. Shvetaketu also got his instruction from his father, Uddhavaka. Very special relationship. And therefore we can take for granted that what Uddhavaka imparted to Shvetaketu must be the very best. But here, mother's love for child is natural. And as long as she is mother, what she does is always for out of love for the child. It is possible that you may have to discipline the child. If the child crosses a boundary that will hurt the child, you may have to discipline the child. That's one thing, and hitting the child, hurting is not hurting. Similarly also, when Lord Krishna appears to kill some demons left and right, it is only out of love. That's what our expectation is. Not out of vengeance, not out of anger. There is a lot of discussion in the Bhakti Shastra about this. So what is this? This Lord appears very cruel. They say, what is this, Swamiji? He did not show compassion. You know, this is compassion business, you know. So Lord Rama went after that deer, did not show any compassion to him. Lord Krishna did not show any compassion to the demons. But compassion is not the description of an action, understand. Compassion is what you have in your mind. It's not a great action is called compassion. It is not that you permit whatever is happening and that is called compassion. That may hurt the very person whom you are permitting. You know that this fellow, sometimes beggars come to you know very well. That giving him 10 rupees, he's going to get only some more alcohol and going to hurt. You may not give him. You may snatch away whatever money he has, it's possible, you know, if you really wish well of him. Come here, I'll take you to the restaurant, eat this food. Or what, you know? So sometimes you may have to be cruel to be kind. What I'm saying is compassion or kindness need not be equated to a given action. What is compassion is, what is the attitude behind the action? And therefore, it looks as though Lord Krishna is very cruel. But no, we don't expect him to be cruel. He has not taken incarnation to be cruel. He has come here to bless everybody. But the way of blessing is different. Some people can best be blessed only when they are released from this upadhi. Is best for them and best for the rest of the society also. But as I said, wise person, in the perception of wise person, everything is self. Not everybody, everything is self. And towards the self, the only response can be one of love. I don't have to make any effort to love myself, that is built in. And therefore, the love will be most unconditional. When the object of love is a self. Or whom I love, I look upon that as myself, then that is going to be unconditional love. As long as there is some distance between myself and what or who I love, some condition will be there. When there is dvaita or duality, when total identification is not there, it is not possible unconditional love. Because my separate identity remains in some way. And so therefore, I always stand for myself, and therefore my self-interest always comes first. And the person whom I love, if there is some possibility of my self-interest being hurt, there is going to be a condition. Meaning I love with the condition that my self-interest is taken care of. Less the distance, less the fear, less the need for self-interest. And therefore, less and less conditions. That is why if we make the object of our love safe and comfortable and accepted, then you get the best out of that person, because no reservation, less and less reservation is called for. More a person feels fearful in my presence, less, you know, of the freedom will be there, and therefore more will be inhibition. So the in perception of wise person, what is his self? So what is his God, what is his Brahman? Okay, but ultimate formula is what is his self? That's the Vedantic ultimate formula. To know everything is Brahman, if I look upon myself as separate Brahman, then it's not adequate. That everything is Ishvara, I still remain separate from Ishvara, is not adequate. As the Swami likes to point out that in the 11th chapter, when Lord Krishna displayed his cosmic form, and Arjuna knew this is Ishvara. But still, his separate identity remained, and so that is not adequate. The knowledge of Ishvara becomes totally fulfilled when Ishvara is known as my very self. This is what Vedantins always point out. Isha darshanam svatma rupataha. The darshan of Ishvara is as my own self. The very enemy and very friend is all self. I cannot be my enemy, nor can I be my friend, you know. I cannot have any relationship with myself, with enemy or friend. I'm the self. And thus, in the perception of wise person, everything is self, there is no enemy and there is no friend. Now for a devotee or for an aspirant, this becomes a value that if an impulse of enemy comes when I see some person, then I should check that impulse. Wait a minute. This enmity is invoked from me, but that is not right. Then I'm just a samsari. If I react in the same manner that everybody else reacts, then what's the difference? Now, who am I? I'm a devotee of Ishvara. Ishvara is my very self. I've discovered ultimately that this person is myself. And therefore a formula was given to us. Atma upamyena sarvatra samam pasyati yorjuna. One who sees everyone as his own self. Brings his own self as a very measure, as a very standard. Meaning that I treat others as, or at least try to treat others as I treat myself. So that becomes the value of this aspirant. So a shatru is there. I'm not yet grown to a point where I'm free from the ideas of friend and foe. I'm not free yet. But I want to become free. If I have value for becoming free from the ideas of likes and dislikes, if I have value for becoming free from the ideas of enemy and friend, recognizing that what binds me are this conclusion of mine, nobody else binds me. Only thing that binds me, restricts me, constrains me. You know, what is it that is an obstacle to my being free? How come I can't be generous to everybody? How come I'm not charitable to everybody? How come I'm not able to love everybody? That's what I love. I wish that I could love everybody, but I'm not allowed to do that. Who doesn't allow me? My own likes and dislikes. No, Swami, this person's behavior is like that. But that behavior invokes some likes and dislikes. Ultimately, if that behavior did not invoke likes and dislikes, I would have no problem with behavior. My little child does not invoke like and dislike regardless of what the behavior is. I have no difficulty having love for the child because it doesn't invoke. So it is my likes and dislikes that are obstacles, not the world. We wish the world be favorable so they don't invoke our likes and dislikes. So that is why you seek the company of those who do not push your buttons. That's called satsang. Your buttons are not pushed. And that's why you go to Mahatmas, to saintly people, to the Guru, who doesn't push any buttons, who invokes the very best from you. So that also we need some recharging the battery. But hopefully that is supposed to be used in our day-to-day. So I say, okay, my mind looks upon this enemy, but that's not right. That's a wrong perception, that's habitual perception arising from ignorance. Your mind, You are ignorant, therefore you look upon this person as an enemy. Realize that it is Brahman, it is Self. Nobody's behavior, regardless of what the behavior is, in the true ultimate nature, he is a Self. Enemy is a wrong judgment, is a wrong perception. This is how I have to work with my mind. And that is how I can remain free from, or I can extricate myself from the reaction of an enemy. Because he invokes enemy from me. By his behavior, why is just being there? That's all. He doesn't have to do anything. But somehow, whatever problem I have, an enemy is invoked from me. I do not allow that enemy to dictate me. That's all. If I'm allowed to be dictated by that enemy, then I'm a samsari. Okay, that may happen. But what is my value? Even if the impulse of an enemy comes within me, I do not become controlled by that. So, shaknoti hai vayasorum. Prakshari, one who is able to contain or keep under check the impulses arising because of likes and dislikes. We get provoked, no doubt. Because there are buttons. Swami, I'm a human being, I appreciate that. We do get provoked. We get fed up, Swami. Happens. But at least we have value that even if I am provoked, I like to keep my impulses under check. That is my value. So impulse of enemy has come. Right away I tell my mind. But Swamiji, I forget it. That time all the teaching goes away at that time. Later on I realize what I did. Then use that later on. Tell the mind, okay mind, see this is what you did. Okay, next time don't do that. Next time when you meet this or a similar person, remember what you are supposed to do. Educate the mind. But again I forget. Again. That's abhyasa in the count there. Vairagya. The one formula. Abhyasa and vairagya. What is vairagya? My value for becoming free from the hold of my impulses. Vairagya towards the reactions of likes and dislikes. I don't want them. And therefore my value for becoming free from these reactions. Abhyasa, again educating my mind. Look mind, what's the reality? This is all play and then what's the reality? You are Brahman, he is Brahman. He doesn't know, but you are supposed to know. He doesn't know, therefore that person acts like that, but you are supposed to know. Even when I tell my mind, see, it doesn't matter, keep telling. Abhyasa. Because these habits are so deeply rooted that they will not go simply by one or two trials. They will require try again and again and again. But how many times, Swamiji? As many times as required. Do not lose patience. Saddhanaha mat paramaha. Lord Krishna says in the last chapter, mat paramaha. What is my object? What is my agenda? What do you want? We must keep that always in mind. Tattva-jnana-artha-darshanam. Lord Krishna will talk about this value. Tattva-jnana-artha-darshanam. Reminding myself again and again. Oh, what's the artha prayojana? What's the purpose of knowledge? What's the purpose of my life? Mat-paramaha. What's the purpose? Purpose is ultimately to discover Ishvara from myself, to discover limitless from myself. My potential is I'm limitless. And to discover that limitlessness is my purpose. And that cannot happen if I again and again act as a limited being. I cannot discover the limitless. But Swami, world is like that. Let the world be whatever it is. That's the challenge. What else do we have to do? This is a real challenge. There are other challenges in terms of job and this and business and so forth. These challenges are there. And those challenges become so real to us that the real challenge gets overlooked. This is a real challenge. What's the real challenge? Mat paramaha. Ishvara. Brahman is parama means I want to discover myself. I want to bring to manifestation my true self. That is limitless. So fake it till you make it. Act as the limitless. How would a limitless one act? No enemy, no friend, no raga, no dvesha, no impulses. That's why he's described here. What do you fake? Such long description is given. So many, it's one value. What is it? Seeing self everywhere. It could have been said in one sentence. Why does Lord Krishna give 8 verses and describes about 30, so many different characteristics of the wise person? So that, this is a description of, there one thing alone is described in all these characteristics, but in different conditions. Since we encounter so many different conditions in our day-to-day life, therefore, the name of Brahman in that condition is Samaha, Vada, Dveshta, Maitraha, Karunaha. These are all name of Brahman in a given situation. So Lord is so kind that in such detail he tells what Brahman is, what Self is, what truly I am. So when a wise person is described really, I am described there. This is what I am. And at least I can meditate upon myself and say, suppose I am like this, suppose I have no dvesha ever for anybody, how wonderful would that be? Look at that. Suppose I am friendly to all, how nice would it be? No, Swamiji, I hate this person, so I think that hating is better than being friendly, but it's not so. We seem to derive a certain amount of satisfaction by fulfilling our likes and dislikes. So when I can get angry at that person and I can do some harm to that person, there seems to be a satisfaction. But that's a very deceiving satisfaction. Unfortunately, I can never be satisfied with that. I would want to do it again and again and again. That is a satisfaction like fire. More you try to satisfy, more you have to do that. So satisfying my raga dvesha seems to give us some momentary satisfaction. That is a very deceiving satisfaction. Dukkha yona evate, Lord Krishna said, this is all cause of all pain. So always remember the agenda. What is the agenda? Tattva jnana sadashana, what is the purpose? Matparama, Lord Krishna is the last verse, that those who are, for whom I am the parayana, I am the ultimate value, I am the ultimate goal. The only goal, where is the ultimate goal? If you want to call him ultimate goal, the immediate goal is advesta, the values are immediate goal, and then Brahman is the ultimate goal, if you want to use the word ultimate. But these are all names of Brahman, understand. That is the reason why the means and end must be compatible. So all of these are the means for ultimately reaching the end, which is Brahman or Ishvara. So means must be compatible to the end. Samashatravacha mitrecha tatha mana apamana. These are all provoking situations. They all push our buttons. Mana apamana yoho. Mana means honor, apamana is dishonor. Also provoke, both of them provoke. Swamiji, well, dishonor is bad. What's wrong with honor? That looks like a sweet enemy, that's all. Honor is a sweet enemy and dishonor is bitter enemy. That's the only difference. Otherwise, both are enemies only. Raga and Dvesha, both are enemy. Raga means an attachment is an enemy also. And a sweet enemy, a smiling enemy. Seems to do me a favor, ultimately to hurt me. And that fellow is a Dvesha. He's an open enemy. Both are enemies. How is raga, how is attachment an enemy? Swami, he gives me happiness when he's satisfied. And that's all right. Creates ground for unhappiness. Because someday he will not be satisfied. Then there is going to be unhappiness. So what I love becomes cause of my unhappiness by the possibility of separation. And what I hate becomes cause of my unhappiness by the possibility of association. So anything, when I look upon anything other than self, that causes problem. Therefore, it is better that we remain free from the influence of both honor and dishonor. When honor comes, I told you last time, honor comes, thank you, I'll let him know. What is honored? The costume is honored, that's all. Self is beyond, I don't honor myself, dishonor myself. There can be honor, dishonor in the self, is always, and so the actor should know. Oh, I'm this king and so everybody is bringing gifts for me and they're all set, prostrating to me. And this, inside he should know. All this belongs to costume, doesn't belong to me. If he thinks it belongs to him, then he's a problem. As soon as he comes out, goes to green room, those fellows also make fun of him. At that time, that honor would be very, you know. So he thought all honor is coming to me. Then next time he becomes a beggar, all dishonor comes. He should know that also doesn't come to me. If honor makes me happy, dishonor will make me unhappy. And therefore, Swamiji, then where is the kick in life? You don't become happy by honor. What? Life is very boring. It's not. That's the thing. Then the life is interesting. Because honor and dishonor, both are, honor is a binding happiness. Happiness honor gives me is binding happiness. How does it bind me? I always look for honor. That's the only thing that makes me happy. Look for honor. Everybody is already then classified by me. This fellow gives me honor or not. How much honor did he give? How long did he prostrate? How did he do that? I keep on calculating. Oh, he's just from distance, he looks at me. He comes close and different people, greet you differently. Everybody is in my mind categorized. This fellow is like that. Ultimately, I do not feel honored at all, even though he falls flat. I think he's making a show. Now, what is honor? Is it just my evaluation, is it not so? It's not a behavior that's called honor, it's how I interpret. And my demands will grow. Then, did he touch my feet or not? And did he do it really sincerely or not? Where is the end to that? Then if my happiness comes from honor, I'm in a miserable situation. Because honor is an interpretation, it's not a behavior, is it not? My own interpretation. And therefore my interpretation is, the nature of this interpretation is that my needs become, they always grow. So in the beginning, even when somebody simply saluted me, I felt honored. But as this goes on, slowly and the salutation has to change, has to bend on more and more and more. My expectation always grow. But Swamiji, then where is happiness in life? This is when I'm successful, I'm happy. When I'm honored, I'm happy. When I'm praised, I'm happy. When there is a friend, I'm happy. And I said, that's a binding happiness. If that is also not there, then what is there, Swamiji? What is there is prasannata, is cheerfulness, which is my true nature, which is veiled by both of these enemies, raga and dvesha. Both of them are veiling my true nature, which is what? Cheerfulness. That is the nature of the self. As Swami says, you need not do anything to become happy. We are doing something to become unhappy, that's all. Happiness doesn't require anything to do. You stop doing, then you're happy. Then there is peace. No, Swami, I stopped doing, still there is no peace in mind. Because then also we keep doing something. Even the eyes are closed, but mentally we keep doing something. That fellow is too kind, and then it all goes on inside, and so samsara goes on. Stop doing that also. But what happens to all? Let him come, let him not come. Let everything be where it is. Don't worry. No responsibility, no duties, nothing to achieve, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. You see, peace comes. Because mind stops doing things. Meaning, it stops making itself unhappy, that's all. So stop making yourself unhappy. Nobody else can make me unhappy. I myself make myself unhappy. If I stop doing that, what is there is happiness. Which is my nature. Can you call it, you can call it peace or happiness. So sa mana, therefore, mana and apmana, honor and dishonor. Just take them in the stride. Honor, thank you God. Dishonor, thank you God. How can you thank God in dishonor, Swamiji? Honor comes just to remind you that God is gracious. Dishonor comes to make me stronger, that in that condition also can I retain my Shraddha for God that is gracious. When somebody dishonors me, insults me, how can you God can come in this form also. Can I retain my Shraddha? So all pain comes to make me stronger. All pleasure comes to just give me a little encouragement. But Swami, that is much more. That pain is much more. That's okay. If there was too much encouragement, then we won't do anything. So some encouragement. Before I collapse, you know, some encouragement comes. So do not take any credit for pleasure or pain. I mean, or honor or dishonor. It's all karma phala. In those forms, Ishvara comes. Thank you, God. Dishonor? Thank you. Honor? Thank you. I respect everything. Sitoshasko dukkheshu. All dvandva, these are called dvandva or pairs of opposites, like two sides of a coin. Shita, Ushna, Sukha, Dukha. Heat and cold, pleasure and pain, comfort and discomfort. So all, earlier of course, man and apman, all is part of dvandva only. Meaning that our life is made up of this dvandva or pairs of opposites. That is how the creation is. God has deliberately done this. Our life consists of pairs of opposites. Meaning that we constantly have to confront these opposite things. Now friend, then enemy. Now honor, then dishonor. That's what wears us out. A metal can wear out when subjected to these opposite conditions. Heat and cold, heat and cold will wear. If you just heat it, then it will develop the... If we keep... We are always dishonored. You will find a comfort with that also. You find, see, people develop comfort in any condition. In slums also they develop comfort. Swamiji, the water comes only once in a day of 15 minutes. You find out ways of dealing with that. If there is consistency, you find out ways of dealing. When there is no consistency, sometimes all of a sudden water comes, then you keep on expecting it, you know, and then you keep on cursing when it does not come. It doesn't come, then I know. So God has created, made His world made up of opposites. Always failure, then I can get used to it. But now success comes. Mana and apmana. So success and failure, honor and dishonor, comfort and discomfort, praise and censure. On, you know. That is why keeping the mind even is very difficult. There's consistency, you can keep your mind even. Right now there is one consistent temperature, no problem. Sometimes there is problem with air condition, all of a sudden people, you know, it becomes so hot and then again it becomes so cold and you wrap your shawl and then... So that keeps happening, then you don't know how to deal with it. If it's cold, okay, you wrap your shawl once and for all, okay. Hot, whatever you do, that you do. But when it changes like that, hunger and thirst, and so these are the pairs of opposites. Samaha, recognizing that in both the forms, Ishvara comes before me. You can call it karma phala. You can call it, this is the result of my actions that comes as honor and dishonor. What is my attitude? Prasada buddhi. Ishvara's grace. This is His way of favoring. But He is dishonoring. That is His way of favoring under this condition. I think He is the... That is why Ishvara is called Vaidya. Vaidyo Narayano Harihi. Vaidya means a physician. A physician knows what is best for the patient. Is it not so? So patient has Shraddha. Trust. Even though the physician gives them very bitter medicine, with faith he takes. With the trust. Then this is meant, this for my well-being. So sometimes Ishvara is physician. And so He sometimes gives you, dishonor. That's a little bitter medicine. But it's medicine for helping me. If I use it as medicine, if I throw away because it is bitter, then of course I cannot be cured. So this trust, that this is called bhakta, who is the trust always in Ishvara. That He is Hrut, He is my well-wisher. Honor, dishonor, fine, Lord, thank you. It's called prasada buddhi. That's why prasadastu prasanna, that's why we can maintain a cheerfulness or an even-mindedness. Shita, Ushna, Sukha, Dukkheshu, Samaha, equal. That's one word actually, samaha, even-minded, in all changing situations. How is he? Samaha, sangha varjitaha, sangha vivarjitaha. Because he is free from all attachment. Free from all attachment. What is meant by attachment? Attachment is an emotional dependence. Attachment comes basically from an emotional need. I am needy. I want to feel comfortable with myself. I want to feel happy. I want to feel secure. Since I cannot make myself feel secure or happy or comfortable, I need somebody or something else to do that. Since I cannot entertain myself, that is why I need some source of entertainment. That's why we need television or whatever various things we have, source of entertainment, because I cannot entertain myself. And less I can entertain myself, more those needs are. So then there is television also, there is internet also, there is iPad also, iPhone also, iPod, all kinds of things are there. Different kinds of games, different kinds of foods, different kinds of music. Surround myself with everything. Right now I am not in a mood for music, switch on TV. I don't like to show right now, see, your internet, your iPad. What is this? All of these, nothing wrong with any of those things. It is my relationship with them. If I become addicted to them, that shows that there is an emotional need there. To use an iPad or whatever it is, you know, is quite all right. Nothing wrong with it. It empowers you. It gives you a lot of facilities. Everything is in your palm. It's a wonderful thing. Cell phone is a wonderful thing. But now I can't do without all the time. Every time, wherever the airway, every moment, they keep talking until the doors in the plane and until then. Then they would be told, now stop it, doors are closed. No sooner doors before they open, it starts it. I guess they are very busy business people, I guess, so I don't know. Talking and talking and cannot remain without that. That becomes a need. That means that I become addicted to that. Sangha means addiction. And addiction is not only for alcohol and smoking, and we are addicted to all kinds of things. We are addicted to food, addicted to clothes, addicted to my dwelling, addicted to people, addicted to so many things. What is addiction? When I am strongly dependent upon somebody to make me happy. That's all. And that is giving reality that I am not happy. I keep giving reality to my feeling that I am not happy, and therefore I am always in lookout for sources who can entertain me, who can make me feel happy, make me feel comfortable with myself. Please love me, please help me, please accept me. This emotional need of being accepted, being loved, being comforted, being entertained, all of these are needs arising from ignorance. They are there. Point is, should I give them reality? That's all. They are there. Even if I cannot will not to have that need because it's there. The point is, should I live a life by validating that need or negating that need? That's where Vedanta comes. Vedanta says that need is not real. It is a perceived need. You don't need anything as you are. Therefore, do not validate that need. Do not give reality to that need. Meaning that, do not satisfy that need. More I satisfy that need, more needy I become. So when there was only one channel in the TV, that was also okay. But there was not enough. So more channels came, and more channels came, and more channels came, and more channels came. And then also fighting, what kind of show will you watch? Is it football or is it some opera or a soap opera, what it is? So then divide the TV into two screens. One watching from this side, other watching from that side. Okay. Then children, they divide in four, you know. Divide in 16. There are as many members of the family. Everybody can have their own children from one screen. This is empowerment is one thing. Addiction is a different thing. Unfortunately, what comes with an empowerment, in no time becomes an addiction. What comes as luxury becomes a necessity. We have to watch out. That's called Sangha. So this is a very slippery path. Our mind is slippery. If we do not watch out, we do not know when we get addicted, when we get attached to things. Oh, I can't, where is my chair? My chair. So is another chair. No, I want that one. It's more comfortable, more expensive. I want that one. My bed, I can't sleep anywhere else. I can't sit anywhere else. My taste, somebody is okay, but then, not my recipe. Chapati, the way I want it. Everything. We become so fussy. We think that we are very, being fussy and, that means we are all connoisseurs and therefore, that's okay. But don't be addicted. Be connoisseur is all right, but do not become a slave. There must always be value for freedom. I do not want to become a slave of anything. Tena tyaktena bhunjil. Enjoy everything, but become retaining of freedom. Tena tyaktena bhunjita. The whole world is meant for you to enjoy. When is real enjoyment? When you can do it with freedom, not out of addiction. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Vadarayanam Sutra Bhashya Krutau Vande Bhagavantau Punah Punah Ishvaro Guru Ratmedi Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Bhyo Namaha Hari Om.